This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of femoral neck fracture non-union from the trauma section on orthobullets.com. As a quick summary, femoral neck fracture non-union represents a failure of bony healing after fixation of an intracapsular femoral neck fracture. Diagnosis is generally confirmed by radiographs demonstrating residual fracture lines, interval displacement, and hardware failure. Treatment is operative, ranging from valgus intertrochanteric femoral osteotomy to total hip arthroplasty, depending on available bone stock, presence of avascular necrosis, and patient age. Now, let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology, as far as incidence, femoral neck fracture non-union occurs after 10 to 30% of femoral neck ORIFs. In terms of demographics, note that increasing age is at higher risk for non-union. Risk factors include fracture morphology, such as significant initial displacement, a vertically oriented fracture pattern, like a Powell's type 3, or posterior comminution. Other risk factors include fracture malreduction, particularly with varus malalignment, older age, as well as delay of fracture fixation of greater than 24 hours. Moving on to etiology, with respect to pathophysiology, as far as mechanism of injury, initial femoral neck fractures occur due to high-energy trauma in younger populations and ground-level falls in the elderly. Non-union occurs after fracture displacement and/or hardware failure before bony consolidation. In terms of pathoanatomy, femoral neck fractures are intracapsular, placing them at higher risk for non-union than other hip fractures. Remember that the femoral neck lacks periosteal or extraosseous blood supply, it's bathed in synovial fluid, which deters fracture healing, and healing is intraosseous only, as there is no callus formation, therefore achieving and maintaining anatomic reduction is essential. Associated conditions with femoral neck fracture non-union includes avascular necrosis, femoral neck malunion, hardware failure, and surgical site infection leading to septic non-union. Medical conditions or comorbidities include low bone mineral density. Now, let's talk about some relevant anatomy. We'll go over osteology, muscles, ligaments, blood supply, and biomechanics of the femoral neck. So starting with osteology, the normal proximal femur neck shaft angle is 130 plus or minus 7 degrees. The normal proximal femur antiversion is 10 plus or minus 7 degrees. Note that the proximal femur consists of tensile and compressive trabecular groups. Moving on to muscles, the hip abductors are important to preserve neurovascular supply and the attachments of abductors to avoid abductor lurch and Trendelenburg gait. Moving on to ligaments, iliofemoral, ischiofemoral, and pubofemoral ligaments attach to the outer hip capsule and help to prevent excessive hip motion. Moving on to blood supply, a confluence of arteries forms an extracapsular arterial ring that divides into the ascending cervical arteries which supply the femoral neck via perforators. The main blood supply in adults is the medial femoral circumflex artery, specifically the lateral epiphyseal artery. Note that the lateral femoral circumflex artery contributes to the anterior arterial ring. The superior and inferior gluteal arteries give small contributions to the arterial ring, and the artery of the ligamentum teres comes from the obturator or medial femoral circumflex artery, which plays an insignificant role in blood supply. Finally, remember that a femoral neck fracture with displacement is thought to disrupt the blood supply to the femoral neck. In terms of biomechanics, in a double leg stance, the force vector through the hip is vertical. In a single leg stance, the force vector through the hip is parallel to the femoral neck. Remember that a compressive load through the hip is 4 times body weight, and repetitive loading can increase tensile forces and lead to a superior femoral neck fracture. Moving on to classification of a femoral neck fracture non-union, this is primarily descriptive, but the one to know is Leighton's classification, which is divided into 3 types. Type 1 corresponds to inadequate fixation or non-anatomic reduction. Type 2 corresponds to loss of fixation with fracture displacement. And type 3 corresponds to fibrous non-union with no displacement and intact fixation. Now, let's talk about the presentation of a femoral neck fracture non-union. In terms of history, these patients will obviously have a history of a prior femoral neck fracture, and it's important to evaluate the medical history for low bone density, metabolic disease, nutritional deficiencies, and tobacco use. Symptoms of a femoral neck fracture non-union can include persistent groin/buttock pain, pain with weight bearing, pain with hip extension, and pain that may radiate down the medial thigh/knee. On physical exam, as far as inspection, it's important to evaluate a prior incision for drainage, erythema, and to verify the approach of prior surgery. As far as motion assessment, these patients may have discomfort with active or passive range of motion at the hip. Know that this is decreased with internal rotation. Patients may also be found to have an antalgic gait on physical exam. Neurovascular examination should evaluate sciatic and femoral nerve function. Finally, in terms of provocative tests, these patients may have pain with log roll, as well as pain with a straight leg raise. Moving on to imaging, recommended views on radiographs include an AP of the pelvis and the hip, a cross-stable lateral of the hip, a full-length femur, and optional views should include a traction slash internal rotation hip view, as well as contralateral hip films for intraoperative templating. Findings can include radiolucent fracture lines, fracture settling, failure of hardware, like hardware backing out, perforation of the femoral head with the hardware, change in fracture position by greater than 10 millimeters, femoral head collapse or AVN, calcar comminution, and varus malalignment. Moving on to CT, as far as indications, this is the most definitive way to diagnose femoral neck nonunion, and it's also useful if diagnosis is uncertain or for surgical planning. Moving on to MRI, as far as indications, there's a concern for diagnosis of femoral head AVN in the setting of nonunion. Finally, moving on to a bone scan, as far as indications, this may help rule out concomitant femoral head avascular necrosis. In terms of findings, a bone scan may show increased uptake in the area of the nonunion. As far as other studies to obtain in the setting of a femoral neck fracture nonunion, of course, you must first rule out infection, and so important inflammatory markers to obtain include a CBC with a manual differential, ESR, and CRP. A hip aspiration is indicated if you are highly suspicious for infection in the setting of elevated inflammatory markers. In terms of an intraoperative tissue sample, you can obtain this if you are concerned for infection, then you can send frozen section for histology before proceeding with further fixation. If positive for infection, a stage approach is preferred. Moving on to treatment of femoral neck fracture nonunion, this can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes observation, which is only indicated in non-ambulatory patients with comorbid conditions. As far as outcomes, these patients will have poor functional outcomes with non-operative management. Operative options include revision ORIF, proximal femoral osteotomy, bone grafting, hip hemiarthroplasty, total hip arthroplasty, and hip arthrodesis. So starting with revision ORIF, this is not recommended due to proximal bone loss, residual leg length discrepancy, and high residual failure rates. Proximal femoral osteotomy is indicated after failure of fracture fixation, nonunion greater than 3 months postoperatively, and for varus collapse. Some considerations to mention include femoral head viability, remaining femoral neck bone quality, patient age in younger patients as arthroplasty may be less desirable, and duration of nonunion as longer duration may cause contractures, fibrosis, and acetabular wear. As far as techniques, a valgus intertrochanteric osteotomy is the most commonly used salvage procedure. The primary issue is mechanical orientation of the fracture in this group. The technique reorients a vertical fracture to a horizontal fracture to achieve compression at the nonunion site. This improves abductor function by restoring femoral length and the abductor lever arm. Patients may still describe persistent limp due to abductor weakness. Contraindications include significant bone loss, joint incongruity, and an age greater than 65, which is a relative contraindication. In terms of outcomes of a proximal femoral osteotomy, there are 80 to 90% union rates. However, there is a high percentage of associated femoral head avascular necrosis, but only a small percentage remains symptomatic after osteotomy. Moving on to bone grafting, this is indicated after failed prior fixation attempts and when the nonunion remains well aligned with the loss of posterior bone stock. Techniques include a quadratus femoris vascularized pedicle graft and a free vascularized fibular graft. As far as outcomes, bone grafting may not be as beneficial when the fracture malalignment is the primary cause of nonunion. Union rates after bone grafting can be up to 90%. Moving on to hip hemiarthroplasty, this is indicated in low physical demand patients and those patients with more comorbidities. It's also indicated in patients with cognitive decline. Techniques can include cemented versus uncemented hemiarthroplasty. In terms of outcomes, a hip hemiarthroplasty is less extensile than a total hip arthroplasty, and there's also a lower dislocation rate compared with total hip arthroplasty. Contraindications include significant acetabular erosion. Moving on to total hip arthroplasty, this is the salvage operation of choice in older patients with femoral neck fracture nonunion. Keep in mind, however, that these patients may have a prior femoral bony defect or poor acetabular bone quality. In terms of outcomes after total hip arthroplasty in the setting of a femoral neck fracture nonunion, there is an excellent 10-year survivorship of approximately 90%, and it's improved for patients greater than 65. In terms of complications, the ones to know include dislocation, however, rates may be decreasing with the advent of new implant technologies. Other complications include trochanteric nonunion, thromboembolic complication, loosening, and infection. Finally, hip arthrodesis is indicated in young patients with non-viable femoral heads, as well as in heavy manual laborers. In terms of outcomes, arthroplasty is becoming favored over arthrodesis, even at a young age. Now, let's talk about some of these management techniques in a bit more detail. Starting with observation, this includes bed rest and non-weight bearing on the affected extremity. In terms of complications, observation may increase the risk for other systemic complications. Moving on to revision ORIF, the approach is through the initial incision when appropriate. The technique involves removal of hardware, adequate reduction of the fracture, and new stable bony fixation with bone grafting. Complications include very high failure rates and residual leg length discrepancy. Moving on to valgus intertrochanteric osteotomy, the approach is a direct lateral approach to the femur. As far as the technique, the goal is to convert vertically oriented fractures to about 30 degrees in order to create compression. You can use a blade plate or a sliding hip screw for ultimate fixation. Complications include femoral malrotation, excessive medialization of the femoral shaft, which can decrease offset and cause an abductor deficiency, and note that a longer blade plate can avoid medialization of the shaft. Moving on to bone grafting, the approach involves a lateral incision just anterior to the greater trochanter between 10 to 15 centimeters long. The technique includes a quadratus femoris vascularized pedicle graft, and note that the insertion of the quadratus is taken down off the greater trochanter with a bony flap that is transplanted to the posterior femoral neck and sutured or fixed in place with screws. Another potential technique is a free vascularized fibula graft. Complications include donor site morbidity, and this may need to be combined with mechanical realignment. Moving on to hip hemiarthroplasty, the approach can be posterior, anterolateral, or direct anterior. The technique can use unipolar versus bipolar implants, and recent studies have not shown bipolar femoral heads to provide any benefit over unipolar heads. However, cemented hemiarthroplasty has shown superior outcomes as well as fewer complications than uncemented. As far as complications of hip hemiarthroplasty, know that results of a failed hip hemiarthroplasty when converted to a total hip arthroplasty are worse than primary total hip arthroplasty. Moving on to total hip arthroplasty, the approach is similar to a hip hemiarthroplasty, where you can use a posterior, anterolateral, or direct anterior approach. As far as the technique, there may be residual bony defects in the proximal femur from old hardware. You may have to bypass this area with longer stems, and this may increase the risk for intraoperative fracture while reaming the canal. Poor acetabular bone quality can make cup placement difficult and increases the risk for fracture. Be sure to avoid overly aggressive acetabular component impaction and augment the cup with screws. Complications may include dislocation and increased rates of aseptic loosening. In terms of dislocation, use of larger diameter heads and new implant technology, for example dual mobility, may be helpful in decreasing dislocation rates. There are also increased rates of aseptic loosening, and risks include patients aged less than 65 and a BMI of greater than 30. Finally, moving on to hip arthrodesis, the approach can be the lateral approach with a trochanteric osteotomy. As far as the technique, the optimal positioning of the hip joint is 20 to 35 degrees of hip flexion, 0 to 5 degrees of adduction, and 5 to 10 degrees of external rotation. Complications include adjacent joint arthrosis slash pain and low back pain. Finally, let's talk about overall complications after femoral neck fracture nonunion. The ones to know include concomitant femoral head avascular necrosis, acetabular cartilage degeneration, Trendelenburg gait, and prosthetic dislocation. Starting with concomitant femoral head avascular necrosis, the incidence is up to 40% in the setting of nonunion, and around 15% appear to be symptomatic. Risk factors include initial fracture displacement and poor reduction. The treatment for concomitant femoral head avascular necrosis is hip arthroplasty. Moving on to acetabular cartilage degeneration, risk factors include associated femoral head avascular necrosis or chondral wear. The treatment is total hip arthroplasty. Moving on to Trendelenburg gait, risk factors include loss of femoral offset secondary to abductor inefficiency in nonunion slash malunion or valgus-producing osteotomy. The treatment is to avoid loss of femoral offset or damage to the abductors during salvage operations. Finally, moving on to prosthetic dislocation, the incidence is 10 to 20% in the salvage total hip arthroplasty group compared to less than 10% in the primary arthroplasty group after femoral neck fracture. Risk factors include abductor insufficiency, abnormal hip joint kinematics after nonunion, and the posterior hip approach. Treatment includes larger femoral heads and dual mobility implants, which may decrease the risk. You should choose the surgical approach to optimize stability. Finally, let's end this review session talking about prognosis of femoral neck fracture nonunion. So as far as the natural history, typically patients present with pain and difficulty with ambulation months after fixation. Persistent pain with radiographic lack of healing at 3 months signifies likely nonunion. Revision surgery should be considered at this point. Poor prognostic variables include unfavorable fracture patterns, malreduction, and poor bone quality. As far as survival with treatment, valgus intertrochanteric osteotomy have eventual union rates of 80 to 90%. And after hip arthroplasty, there's approximately 90% implant survivorship at 10 years and 75% at 20 years. Keep in mind that there's a higher rate of dislocation, up to 10 to 20% compared to primary hip arthroplasty. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over one quick question to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. A 76-year-old male community ambulator presented to clinic complaining of pain in the left groin that has been persistent for the last 8 months. Radiographs obtained from the clinic demonstrate a non-union of a femoral neck fracture after suboptimal fixation with three cannulated screws in a triangle configuration. You suspect a femoral neck non-union and obtain a CT scan which confirmed it. Which of the following statements is true? And the choices are 1. Total hip arthroplasty will provide the patient with the best long-term outcomes. 2. Valgus malreduction is closely correlated with failure of fixation after reduction and cannulated screw fixation. 3. The patient's best outcome would be with an open reduction, bone grafting, and changing to an inverted triangle configuration of screws. 4. The most appropriate treatment is a valgus osteotomy to correct malreduction. And 5. Providing this patient with a hemiarthroplasty increases rates of postoperative dislocation when comparing to total hip arthroplasty. The correct answer to this question is 1. Total hip arthroplasty will provide the patient with the best long-term outcomes. So a total hip arthroplasty after non-union of a femoral neck fracture would provide the best long-term outcomes in a 76-year-old male who is a community ambulator. After non-union of a femoral neck fracture, hemiarthroplasty and total hip arthroplasty are good salvage options for physiologically older patients. When deciding between these two options, total hip arthroplasty is better for active and cognitively intact patients. Total hip arthroplasty is also indicated in patients with radiographic evidence of degenerative disease about the acetabulum. Hemiarthroplasty is advocated for patients who are older and less active. Yang et al. Retrospectively investigated the risk factors for non-union in patients treated with cannulated screws. They reviewed 202 patients who had femoral neck fractures and were treated with internal fixation with cannulated screws. They identified that triangle configuration, displaced fracture, borderline or unacceptable reduction, and increased screw shaft subchondral purchase over the femoral neck were all risk factors for non-union after internal fixation. Inverted triangle configuration was found to increase the rate of union. Archibek et al. Retrospectively reviewed the outcomes of 102 total hip arthroplasties after failed internal fixation for a hip fracture, including both femoral neck and intertrochanteric. They concluded that the conversion of failed hip internal fixation has elevated risks compared to a primary total hip arthroplasty. However, it may still be successful. The biggest concern for these patients postoperatively are periprosthetic fracture and dislocation. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 2, valgus malreduction is closely correlated with failure of fixation after reduction and cannulated screw fixation is incorrect, as varus reduction is closely correlated with failure in this fixation method. Answer 3, the patient's best outcome would be with an open reduction, bone grafting, and changing to an inverted triangle configuration of screws is incorrect, as the patient's best outcome would be with a total hip arthroplasty. Answer 4, the most appropriate treatment is a valgus osteotomy to correct malreduction is incorrect, as this would be a good option in a younger patient, but given the age and functional capacity of the patient in the question stem, the best option is a total hip arthroplasty. And finally, answer 5, providing this patient with a hemiarthroplasty increases rates of postoperative dislocation when comparing to total hip arthroplasty is incorrect, as patients with a hemiarthroplasty have lower rates of dislocation. That's all for this review about femoral neck fracture non-union. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.